Hey, this is Pastor Ricky Ortiz at MetaChurch, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into our podcast and supporting our ministry. If you'd like to learn more about MetaChurch, you can visit us online at meta.church, and we're praying this message inspires you and encourages you to pursue your relationship with Jesus.
Continuing a brand new series that we started last week called Right Path, Wrong Direction. And in case you weren't here, or in case you're listening or watching online and you weren't a part of the first week, this whole series is about things that we do, or for most of us, if you're a part of a church community or you grew up in a church community, things that you've done or have done growing up. And they're good things, but maybe they don't always produce the best results, or maybe our motives in these things don't always lead us closer to the heart of Jesus. And as I said, these things are good things, but just because they're good doesn't mean that we're good. And so this whole series is about kind of taking these components, taking these pieces, and not trying to necessarily set the record straight, but allow us as a young church community to step forward in the right direction and actually move closer to the heart of Jesus so that we're not 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road and realize, oh, wait, we got this backwards, or this was the right path, but we moved in the wrong way. And so that's kind of the premise of this series. And so we're going to jump right into it today with the scripture this morning, coming from the Gospel of Luke and starting in chapter 10. Verse 38. And so this is a story that Luke captures for us, and this is what he says. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. So she came to Jesus and said, "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me." Now, does anyone have a sibling? Anyone have this conversation with your parents? And you're like, look, I'm doing all the stuff, and they're just sitting around playing PlayStation. Like, that was me and my brother growing up, okay? So tell her to come and help me. Verse 41, but the Lord said to her, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details." Verse 42, "There is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her." I have a question for you. Do you know someone? And if this is you, you can just pretend it's someone else, so it's okay. But do you know someone who's like a genuine busybody? Like they cannot remain idle. If you know someone, just raise your hand. Don't point at them. Don't call them out. But if a genuine busybody, like they can't sit still. Okay, they always, if you go to their apartment, they're moving things around, shuffling things. They're kind of just kind of on the go nonstop, and they can't just sit for a moment. That's my dad. My dad is a nonstop kind of just moving around, always doing something. If you go to my dad's apartment, my dad lives in Daytona Beach. He's been in the same apartment for, I don't know, a decade or whatever. You go to his apartment, everything is always in the same place or in its proper place. But when you show up, he just starts moving things as if they were in the wrong place. And he just starts doing, and then my dad is a trained chef. And so he's, you know, you come in and he's like, "All right, well, I'll just start cooking stuff." He grabs stuff out of the fridge, he throws it in the stove, and he just starts, you know, cooking everything. And then he's running upstairs to get something out of his, you know, bedroom. And then he comes back downstairs, he flips the TV on for you. He's like, "Oh, you want music?" And so he puts music on. He's like, "It's kind of hot in here." He opens the door and like, and it's like, we're in Florida. Like, this is not going to make it better. It's just going to get more hot. And so, he's just nonstop, like on the go. And I think maybe part of that was his culinary training, you know, that he always wanted to have a clean kitchen and he always wanted to run something that was organized and you know, being in the kitchen at busy times, just kind of moving nonstop and going from one thing to the next and doing this. And so that's just kind of my dad. It's just like he does not sit idle. I mean, he is up and running. True story, not this Christmas, but last Christmas. I call my dad, right? Because that's what you do as a good son. You call your parents on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I call my dad and I'm like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I FaceTime him and he's like, "Oh," and he's kind of like trying to like hide the phone or like hide, you know, like what's around. I'm like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm nothing. I'm just outside." I'm like, "Well, what are you doing outside?" And his pickup truck in the back was full of basically bicycle parts. And he was going around neighborhoods because people got new bikes on Christmas. And so he was collecting the old bikes that they had thrown out so he could scrap the metal and make money. And he's like hustling on Christmas. Like, this is my dad. So here's the funny part, right? I talked to my brother later on Christmas Day. And I was like, "Yeah, what are you doing?" I was like, "Did you talk to Pa, you know, our dad?" I was like, "Did you talk to him today?" He's like, "Yeah, he told me he talked to you. He said that you were like acting weird with him and that you were looking at him funny." I was like, "Did he tell you why?" And he's like, "No." I was like, Yo, he was out picking up bicycles on Christmas Day so that he could scrap them. And my brother started laughing. So my dad tells me, oh, yeah, Ricky was looking at me funny. But it's because he couldn't sit still even on Christmas Day. Like, that's just him. And I guess I have some of that, not nearly to the extent as my dad, but there's elements of it that I see in my own life where, for instance, you know, yesterday, I wake up on a Saturday, and the moment I wake up, I just can't stay in bed. I have to get up. I have to go do something because I feel like I'm wasting time. And so it's every single day. It doesn't matter. The moment I wake up, I got to get up. It's just, I can't sit around for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour. I don't know how people do that. It just drives me nuts. And so I've just got to get up and move. And I think, you know, when you think about that busybody kind of personality or person, I think probably all of us to a certain degree would say there's aspects or elements of our lives that are similar to that. And maybe it's not about, like, cooking everything. Maybe it's not about tidying up stuff and moving things and shuffling things around. Maybe it's not that when you wake up that you just got to pop out of bed. But there's something or some aspect for most of us that feels like, well, I just got to go. Our mind is constantly churning, or I'm thinking about the next thing, or I'm moving on emotionally or psychologically onto whatever is in front of me, or I've just got to get these tasks done, and I've got to get this work stuff done, and I got to accomplish these things. And I think, you know, a lot of us can relate to that. And the fact is that, honestly, it's really not like it's a bad thing. It's not a negative thing. In fact, from a cultural standpoint or society or standpoint and a societal standpoint, it's something that's rewarded. And it's celebrated and it's honored and it's recognized as a noble thing, right? Like, put it in a work context. No one likes to work with the guy or work with the girl who has to be told a million times what to do. We like the self-starter. We like the person who can keep themselves busy, who can be productive, who can do things right, and they don't have to be, you know, told a million times, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And we ourselves like to be that person because we know that it can lead to promotions and raises and opportunities and new jobs and recognition and all that. But there's nothing worse than when you work with the opposite person. I mean, several years ago, I worked with this guy, and he was probably unequivocally the most lazy person I've ever worked with. I mean, this is like 2011. And he's watching YouTube before it was justified to watch YouTube videos all day. You know, now it's like you can kind of get, oh, this is work stuff over here. You know, I'm just like kind of looking up over here. Back then, it wasn't work stuff. It was like cat videos and just weird stuff that now is on Facebook. And so we'd have like a staff meeting. And so, hey, did you do, you know, XYZ, the things that you said you were going to get done? And it's like, oh no, I forgot about that. I'm going to be on it right today. And then next week, same question. And I'm like, well, you know, no, yeah, I've got a conversation this afternoon. And then I'm like, why are we waiting a week to fact check this guy? Why are we waiting a week to find out? Because it just delayed everyone else, and the rest of us had to do and kind of pick up the slack. But when you know someone and when you work with someone who can do the things they do, who can kind of move from point A to point B and can get, you know, task A and task B done without ever being told to do those things, it's actually really rewarding and really fulfilling. And when you are that person, the recognition you get from it and the satisfaction you get from it is also really rewarding and also very fulfilling. So it's a good thing. It's not like it's a bad thing. The problem is that on a more intrinsic level, we start kind of tying things to this busyness. We start tying things to this kind of productivity or this lack of idleness. And really, in a way, it becomes our means or our method for proving our worth and proving our value. Because financially, in jobs or in places of work, that's how you're rewarded, right? So here's a dollar amount associated or connected to the work that you provide. And so that must be what I'm worth. That must be what how valuable I am to this organization or this person or this company or this contract. And so we kind of get wrapped up in that. And what we don't realize is that we take this thing that's a good thing in culture and a good thing in society and becomes actually a dangerous thing in faith. It becomes a very dangerous thing in faith. Because what I realize is that we get in a lot of trouble when we start tying our worth and start tying our identity around the things that we do, quote, for Jesus, and then believe that this is what makes us worthy in God's eyes. This is what makes us kind of the type of person that God would welcome into his presence. This is what makes us the type of person that can be kind of in a church fellowship or in a church community and received and celebrated and recognized and praised. And it's not just your fault. I mean, it's a whole kind of systemic thing where we recognize people who do that and we honor that and we praise that and we celebrate it. But one of the things that I'm realizing is that the older I get, the more aware I become how many Christians place their merit, their worth, their value in what they do rather than what Jesus has done. And it becomes about what I'm doing for God, what I can do in the church, what I can do in my community, what I can do that establishes kind of my credibility, if you will, and gives me a platform or gives me recognition or gives me a status level, even if it's not something that's publicly proclaimed, but in our hearts makes it feel like this is why God accepts me. This is why God likes me. And again, these are good things. The things we want to do, people who want to serve in the church, people who want to serve out of the church, people who want to, you know, be involved in making a difference and making an impact. Those are good things. It's not that those are bad. What's bad is when those good things become the center or the focal point of our identity and our worthiness in our relationship with God. In fact, if you've ever felt the need to get involved in a church to kind of prove or demonstrate how committed you are, then you fall and pray to this. If you've ever felt that impulse to begin serving or to begin volunteering or to begin doing something at a church without ever knowing the heart of the ministry or the vision of the ministry or where it was going, then you fall and pray to this. And if you've ever felt guilt or shame when you compare yourself and what you do to other people and what they do, then you fall in victim of this. You've been on the right path, but moving in the wrong direction. These things are important. These things are significant, but they're not necessarily in and of themselves or all alone moving us closer to the heart of Jesus. And obviously, this isn't a new problem, right? Because Luke, in his writing, is kind of revealing this is essentially what's going on between Martha and Mary. It's why Martha got scolded and Mary was celebrated. And it's why, you know, Jesus kind of made this point, and I don't know what the main point necessarily of Luke's writing was in this, but I do believe an aspect or an element, a key element of him writing this was to reveal to us that we can get so busy doing stuff and actually miss out on the most important thing.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, look back at verse 40. And here's what it says, again, just to refresh our memories, but Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. Notice her tone, notice her posture, notice kind of her frustration and her disappointment. And I think actually when you look at Martha, when you see her in this context or when you see her in this portion of scripture, what you find is that Martha, that she kind of had a few things going on, but I'll just kind of highlight some of them. She was distracted, she had an agenda, and she felt overlooked. She was distracted, she had an agenda, and she felt overlooked. Think about this. She was distracted. Why? She was busy doing stuff, getting ready for her guest. So she was, you know, there is the Savior of the world in her home, and she's too busy to hang out with Jesus. She's too busy tidying up. She's too busy getting things done. She was completely distracted. Why was she distracted? Because she had an agenda. She had a fancy dinner going on. She had some guests coming over. She had some plans later that night. They need to be taken care of. They need to be buttoned up. So it was about her agenda, not God's. And then she felt overlooked. She says, does it not seem unfair to you? Now, I read and teach out of the New Living Translation because I feel like it best represents the way we speak and communicate on a day-to-day basis. But there are some issues with the New Living Translation in terms of how it translates things. And this is one of them because it says, does it seem unfair to you? But actually, a more accurate translation is, Jesus, do you not care? Jesus, do you not care? So it wasn't, does it seem unfair to you? It wasn't like a hypothetical. It was an accusatory tone. Jesus, do you not care about me? I see you care about my sister. But I feel overlooked. I feel forgotten. I feel like I've been kind of neglected in this whole process. And so Martha had these things, and I think actually within these issues, what we find are some maybe deep-rooted issues within ourselves. I don't say this to kind of point a finger at Martha, but rather to use this as a mirror that points back to us. And I think there's these deeper three, I'll kind of give you three based off of each of these, lingering insecurities that affect us and that actually not just affect us, but infect us when it comes to our relationship with Jesus and doing the things that he's called us to do and being the people that he's called us to be and stepping into the calling and the purpose and the significance and the opportunities that will present themselves on the road and on the journey to following Jesus. And so I want to share those things with you, talk a little bit about them, and then we're going to kind of look at, this is the stuff that maybe moves us in the wrong direction, but what does Jesus say and what does Jesus offer that actually moves us back in the right direction? And so the first kind of lingering issue is this idea of approval. Approval. I try to project, I guess, that I'm a macho kind of guy, that I'm tough, that I can handle some things. And I think physically I have a pretty high pain tolerance. And so I think I've always had that as a kid and just kind of navigate. So I think what I tried to do as a kid was maybe kind of take that physical pain tolerance and kind of transpose it onto my emotional pain tolerance. And so I would do that by saying something like this. I don't care what people think about me. I don't care what people think. I don't care what they say. That's their problem, not mine. And it was kind of like this protective mechanism to maybe that would just kind of project or exude, you know what? I don't need people's approval. But it couldn't be any further from the truth. Instead, it was, I grew older and through lots of dollars and counseling, what I realized was that I actually needed approval. I actually wanted approval. Counselors will tell you a lot of great things if you give them a lot of money. And I learned that approval was actually this thing. And I just kind of said, I don't care what people think as a facade, as a means of protecting myself, as a means of not feeling vulnerable. Or feeling like I was going to be kind of in a position where someone might take advantage of my need or desire for their approval. And I think most of us are no different. In fact, with each of these things, I would argue that every single person in this room has a struggle or a wrestle with one of these things or with all of these things at different points in time, in different situations, different circumstances will trigger these things and cause you to respond in a way that maybe you didn't even know you would respond and you don't know why you responded, but it comes back to something like approval. I mean, think back about Martha's situation. You know, she had this dinner. Why was she distracted? Because she had a dinner. But what did she want to focus on? Her guest. What was the approval? She was not Jesus' approval. She needed her place cleaned up. She needed the food ready. She needed all these things up to her guest standards, to their standards, not hers. And so if my guests come in and things aren't right, if my guests show up and the food's not ready, if my guests show up and I'm the only one doing the work and my sister's over here lounging, relaxing, then I'm gonna look bad. And I think the thing is we all want people's approval. We all recognize the need for this. We all care about what people think, but more specifically, we care about whether or not people approve of us. We need to know that it's not just what they think, but it's that they think positively about us. That they feel, they esteem us in a worthy type manner. And so this approval is something that affects all of us in some capacity or another. The second kind of lingering issue, the second deep-rooted issue is this issue of validation. Validation. Think back to the story, right? Martha has an issue with Mary, but does she go to Mary? No. She goes to Jesus. She's looking for someone else to validate her. Jesus, tell her she's doing wrong. Jesus, tell her she's wrong and I'm right. She doesn't go to Mary to say, hey, Mary, I really need your help. We got some people coming over. You know, we're sisters. We live here. You know, hey, our friends are coming over and it's going to look bad if things aren't ready. No, no. She says, hey, Jesus, does it seem unfair to you? Do you not care about the work that I'm putting into this thing? About the effort that I'm putting in? About the time I'm taking? About how much this is consuming me while my sister just kind of sits around and does nothing? She wanted validation. She wanted to know that the work she was doing, the things that she had occupied herself with, were worth it. And I think, you know, maybe the easiest way for you to relate it is when you go back into a work type situation and you do something for someone or you do something in a school type work or situation and you realize that you did all this work and no one even said thank you. That no one even said, hey, good job. That no one even said, yeah, that was the right thing. What you're looking for is some level of validation. And we do this all the time in our relationship with God. God, I went to church, I showed up, I served, I did something. Hey, God, you see that? That was good, right? And it's kind of like we're a puppy. And we're like looking for this cosmic dog owner who just kind of rub our head and tell us, good boy, good girl. But it affects us and it infects us more than we realize. And thirdly, there's this issue of self-worth. Self-worth. At the end of the day, Martha's issue, Martha's problem, was rooted in fear and insecurity that projected into her self-worth or her lack of self-worth. These things led her to believe that something there was missing. Jesus, tell her to come help me. I need validation. I need to feel worthy. I need assistance. I need someone that says, yeah, what you're doing matters, and I'm going to step in, and I'm going to back it up, and I'm going to assist you, and I'm going to help out, and I'm going to join in, and I'm going to support you, and I'm going to affirm you, and I'm going to do all these things because you matter, Martha, because you're significant. She wanted to be and feel important. She wanted to look, and her busyness played into her views of whether or not she was worthy or unworthy. And I think this is something we all wrestle with, some of us overtly, some of us discreetly. Because in every situation, there are things that we do and things that we don't do that play into our views of ourselves. And because we view ourselves in a certain way, we also associate a worthiness or an unworthiness to that view. And so we will do things if we believe it's going to project or it's going to create a value of self-worth that makes us feel better about ourselves. We're going to do other things or avoid other things if we feel it's going to create or project an image or a worth of ourselves that we don't like or that we don't agree with. And then there are times where none of that matters because we just don't feel worthy. No matter how much good we do, no matter how many of the right things we do. And a lot of times because the things that we didn't feel proud of or the things that we didn't value or the things that weren't worthy making are the things that kind of linger and say, no matter how much good you do, you'll never be worthy. Yet, like a hamster, we jump back on that wheel and run as fast as we can until we either trip up or fall off, thinking that maybe at some point we'll be worthy. And truth be told, you know, we've been at this thing at Meta for almost 2 years. And Krista, my wife and I, as we started this thing, the fact of the matter is we've seen all these things kind of bubble up and surface up to the top as we started this church community, where people have come and said, hey, I want to do this. You know, and they come in 2 or 3 weeks and they're like, yeah, I'm in. I want to go jump in and head over heels and just kind of, which by the way, head over heels, I was trying to think about that. What does that even mean? it makes like head over heels. I mean, when what, no pool, I guess a dive or something maybe. Anyway, so they just like, hey, I'm ready. Here I am. I can do X, Y, Z. I can give this, you know, I can be over here. I can do this. I can offer this. And it's crazy to us because what we realize is that we just kind of push back a little bit and say, hey, just give it a little bit of time. You don't even know if you like us yet. You don't. You've just only been here 2 or 3 weeks for an hour. I mean, how do you know if you really like someone? You're trying to commit. You're trying to get married. We've just been here for 3 weeks. Like, let's just kind of hang out and date. And it happens. But the reason why is because they're craving approval. They're craving validation. They're craving a sense of self-worth. Something that says, hey, this is what I do. And maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe you were programmed that way. Maybe a previous church experience or a church situation told you that's the only way you'll be worthy. That's the only way you'll be approved of. That's the only way you're going to get validated in this community. And so it just kind of created this thing that you just feel like, I got to replicate this no matter where I go, whether it's Meta or somewhere else. And we've seen it. And the fact is, like, it's not that we don't want your help. It's not that we don't want you to be involved. It's not that we don't want you to step into what God has for you. It's that we just realized we played that game. And the consequences and the damages are far more costly than we ever envisioned. And we'd hate for you to incur those same costs. And in the bigger picture of things, we realize that Jesus has something so much greater for you than you could ever offer for him. Yeah. And so we'd rather you step toward that first, and out of the overflow of that, let the rest come. And I think you got to realize that this is exactly what Jesus did or exactly how Jesus responded in this situation. I mean, go back to Luke 10, 41 and 42. And this is what he says regarding approval, regarding validation, regarding her self-worth, regarding Martha's issues, not just Martha's issues. Remember, it's not about Martha. It's a mirror pointing back to us. Here's what Jesus says about our issues. The Lord says to her, my dear Martha, you're worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. He tells Martha to simmer down. Hey, back up. Take it easy. Chill. Relax. Breathe. Exhale. Inhale. because you're missing the mark. You're concerned with all these details. You're caught up in this moment and trying to rush from this to this and this and figure these things out, and you're missing the most important thing. In fact, Mary has discovered it. Mary has found the one thing that matters. Oh, for the past 2 weeks, I've kind of tried to wrestle, like, God, what's that one thing? What's the one thing that matters? Because there's probably several, a handful of applications or ways to interpret this. What's the one thing you were talking to? What's the one thing you were trying to figure it out? And that said that Mary figured out, and God, what is it? Because what's the one thing that I need to know, right? Like, what's that one thing so that if Mary discovered it, I can discover it too? And we could guess, we could speculate, we could make assumptions that are pretty accurate or what we would say are accurate. But the fact of the matter is, while we may not know that, what we do know is that Mary caught something Martha didn't. Mary took hold of something Martha didn't. Yeah. Mary engaged in something that Martha didn't. In fact, what Martha missed is something that all of us likely missed the first time we read through this scripture. In fact, go back to verse 39. Here's what happens. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. You see, Jesus had something to say. Jesus had something to speak. Jesus had something to offer. Jesus was ready to unleash something, to give something, to bestow something, but Martha was too busy, too overwhelmed, too caught up in stuff, too distracted, too hurried, too rushed, trying to get things right for everyone else that she missed out on the one thing that Jesus could have offered to her.
That's good.
Could it be that Jesus has one thing he wants to say to you, but you're so busy, you're so distracted, you're so hurt, you're so caught up in this performance trap that you think this is what's good, and Jesus is like, you're missing the thing that I want to say to you today.
That's good.
That one thing. I don't know what that one thing was for Mary, but I want to believe that Luke didn't tell us what that one thing is, because Jesus has one thing for me. And that Jesus has one thing for you. And that Jesus has one thing for you. And he's not going to give up on it. But we are too busy. If we would just stop doing stuff and actually take a moment to listen to what Jesus has to say to us, then we could be transformed. And what he wants you to know is that you are worthy. What he wants you to know is that you are loved, that you do matter, that you are already significant in his eyes, that you are already priceless in his life. What Jesus wants you to know is that he sees your circumstance. He understands your situation. He sees the disparity. He recognizes that you're in trouble, and he wants to speak into that, but we're too busy, too consumed, too kind of caught up in performing or doing something that we actually miss out on just being in his presence. And we miss out on what he wanted us to catch. That one thing that you don't have to draw attention to yourself anymore. You don't have to play the performance game. You don't have to win volunteer of the month at your church or at your gathering or at your work to feel validated in who you are. Because listen, I've said it before, I'll say it again. If somebody died for you, you don't ever have to question whether or not they love you. If somebody died for you, you don't have to question whether, if they came for you, you don't have to feel like they're gonna forget me. He came for you, each and every one of you, each and every one of us. And it wasn't about, well, I don't know, if I don't do this stuff, is Jesus going to see me? Is he going to hear me? Is he going to respond to me? Well, but if I don't do this, am I not going to measure up? Am I not going to be a, quote, good Christian? Am I not going to do these things that matter? Am I not going to be kind of esteemed in everyone else's eyes? And Jesus saying, look, I gave 2,000 years ago, I sealed that determination. I died and paid the price so that you would know once and forevermore, you are worthy. You are loved. You are enough. And if we could just kind of get this thing in our mind, if we could just understand in our hearts that what Jesus wants to do is speak identity before he ever speaks to responsibility, we would be way better off for it. That our responsibility only flows properly out of our identity. Our responsibility does not produce identity, at least not the one you want to carry for the rest of your life. But that our identity in Jesus and in Jesus alone is enough. And that identity in him is what produces the type of responsibility where we find validation, where we find worth, where we find approval, not because of everyone else, but because Jesus said, this is who you are. This is what I've called you to do. This is who I've called you to be. And when you arrive to your final destination, Jesus can say to you, well done, my good and faithful servant.
Yeah.
Because it came from your identity in him. We get it wrong when we do stuff for Jesus and miss out on the fact that Jesus actually did something for us. Mm-hmm. Serving, volunteering, making a difference, great things. But none of those things are greater than what Jesus has done for us. And none of those things are greater than what Jesus is building in us. And so when we talk about Meta, when we talk about this vision, this church that we have, and this community that we're building, one of the things Krista always said is that we want to lead a group of people who understand that we serve from the security of who we are, not to prove who we are.
That's good.
In whatever capacity, if someone is serving in MetaKids, if someone is serving with our greeting team, if someone is serving in production, if someone is serving in worship, if someone is serving the homeless during the course of the week, if someone is serving in an extra kind of outside of Meta community event, if we're serving with Night to Shine, if we're serving wherever it is, it's not because this proves how committed we are. This proves how good of a Christian we are. This proves how bought in I am. It doesn't prove any of that. It's that this is who I am, and out of who I am, I get to do these things.
Yeah.
More importantly, out of whose I am. Because when Jesus paid the price for you, he paid the price so that you wouldn't ever have to question your worth. So that you wouldn't ever have to question, are you approved? So you wouldn't have to ever doubt or wonder, does he validate who I am and who I'm becoming? When our identity is found in Jesus, what you'll find is that actually you'll do the things you've been called to do anyway. Because when your identity is in Jesus, you can't help but become like Jesus, which means you can't help but do the things Jesus would do. So it doesn't matter what role you serve in. It doesn't matter what team you're a part of. It doesn't matter if you have a team or don't have a team. It only matters that you're being like Jesus and doing what Jesus would do himself. Because that's what identity is. It's not defined by a volunteer role. It's not defined by a ministry team. It's not defined by a church organization. It's not defined by anything I or my wife or whoever's your ministry leader would ever put on you. It's defined by the one and only Son of God, and that's enough. That's the right path and the right direction.